Hello and welcome back to Mess Explorers with Xavier and Alan, where as always we'll be looking at all manner of films from around the world. Now remember to follow and subscribe to us on your favourite listening platform, as well as on Facebook, Instagram and YouTube, in order to stay up to date and get some extra goodies. This week we're going on a deeply ponderous Thai journey from 2010 with Uncle Boon Mee, who can recall his past lives. So let's get going. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Sabe, and of course, hello to our favourite fans. Welcome back to Mez Explores. And before we begin to cross the ethereal planes and cross-mingle with other entities as we proceed to face our own death, remember, as always, our podcasts are best enjoyed if you've seen the film prior, as we do contain spoilers. As Dave said, we are looking at Uncle Boon Mee, who can recall his past lives, which is a 2010 Thai film directed by Apichat Pong Virasakul and inspired by the book written by Para Siripairaveti. Uncle Boon Mee stars Thanapat Sasima, Janjira Pongas, Sadak Kawibadi, and Anathakaran Apewak. Just to name a few. Look, I might be butchering these names, and so I want to sincerely apologize to our Thai audiences. But without further ado, Save, let's get straight into the film. What did you think?
Great. Well, first of all, not being a Thai listener, I think you did a pretty good job of reading those names. So kudos to you there. Look, on the whole, despite some obscure scenes and narrative which I felt didn't quite fit the title, I enjoyed this film. And you know, yes, there were some disappointing elements straight out the gate, such as the opening day for night footage. And there were certainly some bizarro moments, such as the creatures which look like what you'd get if a Jawa had sex with a Wookiee. I'm going to dub them Jawookies for this episode. But overall, this was an intriguing film which was beautiful for its simplicity. Whether it was just the opening bus scene which felt like I was along for the journey, or even just the soundscape, it all just worked in a serene kind of way. And coupled to a narrative which was both simple and complex at the same time, which I have no doubt many a listener may not have been able to get completely across, and that's not to say that I necessarily did either. So, on the whole, I quite enjoyed this film.
Firstly, I think what you said about the title is very apt. He doesn't actually recollect his past lives initially, and I don't even think he does at any point in the film. But yes, the creatures are actually just ridiculous, but in a good way, and particularly the case of the ghost monkey. It did remind me of Chewbacca from Star Wars, as you mentioned. But I don't think the film had a high budget, nor did it need one, in my opinion. The journey of Boon Mee was somewhat linear at times, and often simplistic. Not only does the bus scene make you feel like you're part of the journey, but the entire film, up to its funeral at least, has that same effect. The audience is on that journey until the transcendence of Boon Mee. Do you feel like this was the intention of the director, or do you think that we're sort of overanalyzing and resultantly us, you know, picking this film apart? At times, the film does feel impenetrable, but maybe that's by design. And if I was to make a film that divides viewers' opinions, I guess that itself is a certain level of adulation.
Yeah, look, I feel this was certainly the intention of the director to bring us along for this journey in the way in which we were. I don't think it was either accidental nor necessarily misinterpretation on our part. There were certainly some times where this film threw up a roadblock, and I think those times may be where some listeners may have got lost, but I am still inclined to believe that it was probably by design. But what were your thoughts on this film?
Look, if I'm to be completely honest with you, Save, this was a very hard sell for me, especially when we've discussed so many great and vivid films in the past. I feel like this film is more than a one-time watch. But even if I was to watch it three or four times, I would need a guide to interpret what the director was actually trying to convey. And I guess that's the problem that I had. There's no guide or reference to explain or even to steer me in the direction of thought. Now, I concede that this responsibility doesn't solely rely with the director, but often I felt like I was interpreting abstract art, where there's multiple possibilities and opinions on what each frame and motif alludes to. Personally, the constant analysis takes away my viewing pleasure. Even though I can summarize the film as being about a man who lived a life as a farmer and keeping bees, and now he's experienced the trauma of an evolving Thailand, now his humble life is about to come to end because of renal failure. But during the final night of his life, he's visited by his deceased wife, his ever so estranged son, or monkey ghost, so to speak, along with these other unique characters. And at face value to a Westerner, the film can be demanding and seem frivolous. But if you actually focus, the film presents a friendly and patient demeanor, and it welcomes you into its unique and beautiful world without much ceremony. And now, the caveat to this is the viewer may need some time to adjust your eyes and expectations.
I think your reference here to it feeling like you're interpreting abstract art is actually quite poignant, and I think that's okay too. For at the end of the day, film is an art form, and some of it's more intricate, delicate, and meaningful than others. And, you know, some you really have to look deep into, and this film certainly falls into that category. You know, for me, this was a film that I struggled to settle into initially, as it didn't align with my expectations, and I had to change them on the fly and come to realize that it was going to be a far more esoteric viewing than normal, as it required viewers to have a deep appreciation and understanding of the hidden meanings, beliefs, and challenges throughout life. And as I said at the start, though, for me, this film didn't really align with the title, and I suspect that's what sets most viewers up for misinterpretation, as this film isn't necessarily really about a man recounting his past lives blow by blow. It's actually so much deeper than that.
And you're right, Abe. And it's actually important to mention that this film won the Palme d'Or at Cannes Film Festival in May 2010. Now, the decisions actually surprised a lot of the film critics, as what Steve Rose describes an episodic, non-linear, open-ended head-scratcher. And in an interview with The Guardian, the director was asked by Mr. Rose why the film was so slow. Is the runaway buffalo really Uncle Boomy? Why the sex scene between the princess and the catfish? Is the cave a metaphor? Is it just a cave? And do you believe in reincarnation? And the response by the director was, but that's what life is. Sometimes you don't need to understand everything to appreciate a certain beauty. And I think the film operates in the same way. It's like tapping into someone's mind. The thinking pattern is so random, so sporadic, jumping here and there like a monkey, he said. Now, Vitas Ethical prefers not to explain anything about the film. He says, this is open cinema. I have my own take, but sometimes that actually spoils the audience imagination. And I can say, in short, that this movie is about a dying man. It talks about the death at the same time, life and dreams, and also the memory of how I grew up within this landscape.
I'm glad you actually mentioned this for our audience, because the most important part of this film isn't necessarily the literal meaning behind it, and it's all up for the viewer's interpretation, just as in real life. We can all perceive and react to the same situation and stimuli differently, and I guess you could argue it's why identical twins otherwise grow up with two separate identities. And this reinforces my point about viewers requiring a different appreciation for it and experiences in life to help them understand it, as that inherently means interpretation of some of the film's themes will be different for everyone, even if they're along the same vein. And I have to say, I respect a director that actually withholds his own opinions on his own creation, because while people may deem his opinion to be the most valid as it's his work of art, that doesn't exclusively mean that anyone else's perception of his art form is any less meaningful. So I think he's right. An audience has greater creative freedom in watching something and their interpretation of it when they haven't been given a viewpoint which they then may take as the literal and be-all and end-all of the film.
Right. Look, I think this is where we might differ in opinion, say, and I might be just a traditionalist or maybe even a novice, but I think for me, I personally prefer some direction by the director. If not, you know, it doesn't have to be a whole manuscript, but just give me something to leech off, right? Mm. And I completely respect your views where this type of silence in opinions might work in an ephemeral film like this, but with other conventional or other art house films, it sort of stagnates the process of enjoyment, because when we're talking about art, I would love an old Renaissance artist to tell me his vision behind a certain stroke or a certain meaning behind a certain posture, a character, or even a color. You know what I mean? Because, you know, yes, we do have our own professionals to sort of deliberate and understand and extrapolate from history, but it doesn't beat having the answers from the horse's mouth, so to speak. But I might be digressing here. The monkey ghost and the abstract jungle settings heed back to pop culture and Thai cinema that were present as the director was growing up. And the motifs of rapidly disappearing landscapes that we see in the third act, it sort of screams that he's trying to preserve them through memory and even a way of wishing them goodbye. I almost sort of felt like this whole movie was a tribute to his father, who actually had renal failure, his country, and once again, the decaying landscape that we see before us. But with that said, Save, I think this is the right time to talk about the themes that we notice in the film. So I'm going to pass it to you and I'll let you start.
For me, the first thing, and I don't know if this is necessarily a theme per se, it's just something that I noticed. It was a nice, I guess, connotation in a sense for the film. It was how nonchalant all the people were at the dining table when the spirit of his deceased wife joined them, and then the Jawookie joined them. That was obviously his either estranged or perhaps missing son. I'm inclined to think that his son had actually wandered off as a child and was never found again. But it was such an intimate and yet simple scene, but it conveyed so much, I guess, about the belief structure of those involved in this film and that acceptance of the dead being with them. And then that ghosts aren't something to be feared. They're not something there to haunt you. They're actually, they live on in you. That's their means of connection to the real world.
Mm.
And I felt that was a really beautiful thing.
Perhaps our conscious identities exist all the time and occasionally sort of surface into, you know, what we call the material world. Now, one thing the film does simplistically but effectively is dissolving boundary. The very idea of narrative beginning, middle, and end becomes almost redundant. The whole thing is sort of a blur. And that example you just mentioned with the ghost at the table, there's no scare elements to this character like we'd see in other movies where ghosts and demons and monkeys with bright red eyes are scary beasts or are depicted as scary beasts. In this film, they're here to sort of send Bumi on his own journey. And when the boundaries to the metaphysical and the physical worlds are blurred, and the viewer becomes to recognize the intention, I think the film takes off to another level. But to achieve that recognition, you really have to be concentrating and really be switched on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as we were sort of saying, this is sort of an approach to life. This is one of the cultural thing. It's also a religious thing, you know, someone's personal beliefs and whatnot. And we have this little conversation about karma and the value of life, and that it's about your intentions and that that's the actual measure of your existence. Did you want to extrapolate a little bit on that sort of element of it?
Yeah, so like for me, there's no real boundary between past and present, dream and reality, and I guess body and spirit. You know, we're exposed to the life that Bumi lived, you know, when he's fighting with the wars of a dynamic Thailand and then settling down to farming like we've explained before. And he also rejects the allure of the city life, as his own happiness is cultivated daily by his hard work and devotion to his own land. And this is a man whose only recent regret is not being able to join his friends in these long walks and leave a certain perimeter from his house, because obviously this is due to his kidney failing and thus preventing him from doing so. And I guess this is fitting as the last journey, you know, he's on, because it's a long walk into the cave and even into the womb where it all began, the nucleus of his first birth. So the karma, the value of life, and his intentions all sort of come full circle. He gets that closure with his wife. He finally understands why his son decided to leave and eventually mate with a ghost monkey. You know, he's not mad about these things. I think at this point in his life, he begins to accept.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this story really was more about a dying man finding his peace and I guess being at peace with his demons as well. And I guess if you wanted to consider his lost son one of the demons that he struggled with his whole life, I guess he'd come to sort of accept that whatever narrative was true. And obviously we don't believe that his son disappeared, mated with a monkey and turned into a different creature. That's in the realm of fable. But that it was the fable that he essentially found as a dying man that said, I'm okay with this and, you know, my life has come to an end and I will leave this world without any great regrets. And I think it was really nice that in his discussions with his wife, he asked, you know, where do I find you? How can I find you in the next life? And she essentially told him that, you can't, I only exist in you, and that once you pass away, I essentially pass away with you as well. And it was this nice little sort of poetic symbiotic relationship between the world of the living and the world of the dead, and how we're sort of, I guess, stuck in between them at that time at which we cross over between those two worlds. But with reference to the cave and sort of, I guess, returning to the womb and all this sort of concept, there was obviously a scene that a lot of people watched and sort of went, hang on a minute, what the hell's going on here? And obviously this is the scene where the princess gets quite intimate with catfish or vice versa. And I will admit, I watched that and the people I was watching this with went, hold the phone. I subsequently looked this up and most people are like, what on earth is that? Now, I will admit, I struggle to see how this relates into the overall narrative. You know, is it saying that he was once a catfish? Yeah. But then I thought, perhaps it actually goes deeper than that. You know, perhaps a catfish is a symbiotic reflection of Bunmi's existence, or perhaps Bunmi was at first a catfish from the cave who mated with a princess to become the man that we saw, only to return to the cave to die where he began. And we actually see young catfish in that scene at which he dies in the cave. And there's both so much and so little here, because it is all up to the individual's interpretation, and I think it really can go so many different ways. How did you feel about that scene?
Oh, this was a very interesting scene, and any sort of cunnilingus with a catfish is is frowned upon in our modern world. But look, I think, jokes aside, this was a vignette which occurs obviously in the middle of the film, and I also couldn't fathom the meaning behind it initially, but attempting to extrapolate it, either the fish, like you said, and the princess could have been a reincarnation of Bunmi. That was my initial interpretation. But I took it a little bit further, where when the princess looks down the lake and sees the younger version of herself, there's a moment where she's drawn to the fish. And then she almost denies her intuition as being false because she believes that, you know, it's because of the reflection that the catfish likes her. And we soon realize that it's the catfish who's created the reflection. And then it says that without her, there's no image. So this unconventional romance or love sort of goes beyond the physical into the metaphysical. And I think this vignette demonstrates how a love can be turned or can be perceived in the context of spirit rather than just body, which I thought was very beautiful. But once again, like I said, the cunnilingus was the icing on the cake.
And I like that you sort of said there about spirit, because we had that concept that ghosts are attached to people and places and that there is no heaven. And when those who love them pass on too, they are forgotten, as I just mentioned previously about Bumi and his wife. And I did wonder if there was an element of that in this scene as well, where upon the princess may have actually been holding on to this ghost, in essence, of someone in her life. And she's obviously gotten older and she still sees herself as a younger woman in the reflection, but she doesn't recognize who she really is as the old woman on the outside. And that the fish in some way actually represented a past love. It wasn't a fish, but she just may have just felt the spirit somewhere, and that spirit was reincarnated as the fish. But again, there's just so many ways this could have gone.
Exactly right. And I think that's what this film does so beautifully, but also so confusingly, where that amalgamation between metaphysical and physical is so warped and so ever present that it's sort of hard to identify what is what. But I guess that's what the director wants us to feel, because this is the journey of a dying man towards the end of his physical life. So this is what we're all seeing.
Yeah, and I think that was particularly prominent given the film felt essentially like it was in three distinct parts and all of them a little bit disconnected. We had the first sort of third of the film whereby we saw Bumi, he was recounting some of his tales, we saw his Jawoki son and his dead wife and whatnot. Then suddenly we moved to the princess and the catfish and it was very abrupt. We sort of went, oh, hang on, is this a different part of the story? How does it tie in? But it was never really clear how it led into it nor how it led out of it. And then post-fact, we obviously see Jen and the monk post the funeral for Bumi and they're sort of counting the cash that's been sort of donated to them by family and friends for the funeral. And so the film was a little bit disjointed. And just one part I would like to point out here was that there was a section in there where we had still photos of the military. And on one hand, you could argue it was another part of Bumi's life, something that's being recounted. But for me, they kind of ruined it because I had such a conflicting feel to the pace of the film otherwise. The rest of the film sort of meandered along at a very casual, laissez-faire pace. And then these still images were quite a confronting juxtaposition to the rest of that film.
Yeah, look, the still images did sort of take away the pacing of the film. For me, I was actually focused on what the characters were reciting when these still photos were happening, where you know, I'm trying to sort of read the subtext or the subtitle and also trying to figure out where it all fits into the narrative, because we do see a picture of the monkey sort of hugging, or a ghost monkey hugging a group of military soldiers. So is this the sort of end of the metaphysical world, or is this the start of global warming or industrialization or globalization? You know, it's so like so many other motifs in this film, it can go multi-directional and it's just left to your interpretation. So yeah, man, that's how I felt about that.
Yeah, because another element I would have said in that was that if these were photos of Bumi at sort of his life, is in terms of what we saw on screen, he was a younger man.
Yeah.
It was that he carried his ghosts with him throughout his life.
Yeah.
But again, it's entirely up for perception. But with that in mind, though, it's just that little point where we obviously do see these photos and then later we end up in the hotel and whatnot. I got a little bit lost when the monk and Aunt Jen actually split in the hotel and were also in the restaurants as well. Now, I have an interesting little take on what I think was going on here. But do you want to tell me what you your take was on that?
Look, I was utterly confused in this scene. The only thing I could sort of come up with is maybe a split in the timeline, or how all timelines sort of merge, or maybe there's a parallel timeline. But I honestly had no idea. I didn't even expect it, to be honest, because I thought like we were done with it. We were about to wrap up the whole narrative. You know, I thought this whole scene was just about how the family reuniting again after Bunmi's death. But there was on the TV the scene of the military happening. So it could tie into the previous still photos that we saw of the military and their, I guess, destruction, or, you know, their progress with certain things that Bunmi predicted. Or the other hand is the nephew dealing with spirituality as a whole.
I have a theory here that I developed post-watching this film. Let me blow your mind hole for a moment here.
Okay, go for it.
So, like you, I also saw the correlation in the scenes of the still photos of the military versus what we see later on the news as military conflict. Now, I took this perhaps to suggest that the entire film was a recount of a past life, a life that was in fact not being told as the story of the dying Boone Mee that we saw on screen, but in fact a future incarnation of him recounting his past life. But again, the beauty of this film is that everyone might see something different. But my idea was that the Boone Mee who's recounting his life, we never actually see. All that we see on screen is the recounts of his life. So everything's actually already happened.
Right. I certainly empathize with you, Save, here, because for a novice like me, I think certain themes went above my head and it duly requires subsequent viewing. The tangents you mentioned sort of like throws the viewer's concentrations, and I guess we're forced to continue thinking about what we saw in the previous frame when something new is sort of unraveling in the current frame. So I think that was my only gripe with this film, where even though the pacing was great, it's still like my mind was racing at, you know, at different parts trying to like unravel all these little tropes and motifs.
Yeah, look, I think it's one of those films that at the time, if you think too hard about it when you watch it, you're going to miss the next thing that comes along. But it's certainly one of those films that's nice to think about post-fact.
Sure. Before we wrap things up, Save, let's have a look at the cinematography and the sound design of the film.
Okay, so there was a little bit of disappointing things in this. As I said, the day for night stuff at the very start. I really hate day for night. Anyone that listened to one of our Navarasha episodes will know my pet peeve about that. And there was also some reused footage in this film where within one scene they used the same footage, I think, twice, if not three times, if I'm not mistaken. And it didn't seem to be a creative decision. It looked like the sort of decision they made because they hoped no one would notice and they didn't have anything else. And this was a point at which he was wandering through the jungle taking photographs. But that said, you know, putting aside those things, which at the end of the day are quite minor gripes in the grand scheme of this film, this was one of the most simply shot films I've seen in many years. And, you know, there was lots of long shot holds. It had sort of quite a pensive and measured pace to it. And I really liked that. I think it was very effective. And to complement that, I guess, was the sound design. You know, there was a lot of white noise in this film, effectively, that worked just so well. I will, however, say that the pop song in the titles was bitterly disappointing, as it was a significant deviation from the feel of the rest of the film. But I did sort of find myself at the end of this film wondering just how different this film would be if it had a complete score. And I think it probably would have actually detracted from this film.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with everything that you said here, mate, because the camera stays stagnant and fixed at one point in the scenes. There isn't too much moving around. You know, this was so simply shot. But I think for some reason, even though it's so simple, it lingers with you. And I can see those dark red eyes of the monkey ghost in the dark background, the translucent body of his wife fading on the dinner table. And as for the ambient sound in this film, or the ambient noise in this film, I think it was really effective. It enhanced the scene of the jungle, the narrative, and even the heavy breathing of Boone Mee as he's doing the walk. Having a score, like you said, would have taken away and detracted from the heart of the film, and I'm glad they didn't do it.
Yeah, and I think an interesting point there too is, maybe this is just for me, but I do wonder if it's for lots of other people. In our everyday life, our life doesn't have a score to it. And when we remember moments in our life, they don't generally have a score to it. We might remember a song or something that was on at the time. But I think for most people, when we remember our lives, we remember the dialogue, we remember the moments, we remember the feel. We don't remember music per se. You know, we're not backed to the James Bond theme when we're taking off in a plane. So I think for this film, for that same reason, it worked so well because it was so reminiscent of how we uninstinctively, naturally, might actually remember our own lives going looking back.
Sure. So with that being said, Save, shall we wrap this film up?
Right. So, I mean, I personally feel that this film could have been so much better than it was. You know, the title was arguably misleading as it was not really about Boone Mee recounting his past lives in the sort of linear sense I think most people would have expected. And the film also seemed to go off on a completely different tangent once Boone Mee had in fact passed away, creating a disconnect for the audience. However, bearing in mind all that we've discussed, that isn't necessarily a criticism either, so much as it is a personal preference for a particular narrative style. Now, for me, this film was both simple and delicately complex. And while I'm not going to say I loved it, it would be completely incorrect to say that I disliked it. So I'm going to give this film a 6.4 out of 10.
Interesting. I think the concept of this film as a future incarnation of Boone Mee recounting his previous life, it did elude me. But like the fact that you've actually mentioned it is something I believe is plausible. And I think your knack for these discrete films has always been impressive. But you know, this one's just gone above my head and caused some headache as usual. But the final sequence in fact, the entire narrative is a homage to the dying, but in a way where the director integrates the afterlife and the soul and transcendence. But this is achieved with acceptance and serenity, offered in place of seriousness and dread. It's one of those rare films that contribute to the sum of all human happiness before moving to the next stage. And it's for those reasons I'm going to give the film a 5.9 out of 10.
Righto, well, that's all from us once again, folks. And remember, you can let us know what films you'd like us to do. Just drop us a comment on our socials. But until then, we hope you enjoyed yet another episode from us. And remember to give us a follow and subscribe on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And recommend us to your friends and family. Until next week, though, bye-bye.
See you guys all soon, and we'll see you all next week.